From the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, KUAR Public Radio brings you Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, the only program on radio today dedicated to the preservation of comparative generational thought, with your host, Phil Marriage. Welcome to the Crossroads of History.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another 2013 edition of Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow here in Little Rock. I'm Phil Marriage, your host. I'm really glad you guys can join us this afternoon. We have a topic that many of you have experienced and probably don't even think about anymore. I'll tell you about that in just a second. But I do want to remind you that we've had a little bit of problem with our website, but it's really a good problem. We changed over to do a lot of our work with the NPR website. So in that process, our website, YTT Show, went down. But it's back up now, and the podcasts are back up, so you'll be able to listen to all the past programs. You'll be able to listen to the much longer version of our programs once again, which I know many of you appreciate if you can't listen to our program here today. Our topic today actually has two words. One is making, and the other one is tinkering. I chose to use the word tinkering because that's the one that's kind of close to my heart anyway. We're going to talk about something that, in my generation anyway, the older generation, was something a lot of us did. We tinkered with a lot of different things. We had people who would be down in their basement or in their garage with a little light over their table, and they're tinkering with stuff. They're making the radios. They're making whatever it might be. They'd take parts and make other things or take things apart. Tinkering was meant a lot to me when I was a kid. Anyway, I have two guests with me here today. Joining me from the middle generation perspective is Joel Gordon. He's the visitor experience director here at the Museum of Discovery in Little Rock. He'll tell us an awful lot about what they have coming up in June for their exhibit time. And Joel, glad to have you with me here today.
I'm excited to be here.
And then speaking from that younger generation, I think, Jackson, you're probably the youngest guest I've had on the program in 13 years. Jackson Lowry is here. He's 14. He is homeschooled, and he is also very interested in robotics and video editing, and, as he says, anything to do with tech. Jackson, glad to have you with me here today.
Glad to meet you.
Joel, at the outset of the program, I want to give you plenty of time to tell us about what the Museum of Discovery has going on in the way of making. Talk to us a little bit about what making is, and then we'll kind of get into some of the extreme elements of tinkering.
We have lots of the extreme elements. Well, one thing is we have an exhibit, a traveling exhibit that's coming up that's called How Things Are Made, which is fascinating because it sort of takes the industry overview. It looks at how industries create things, how things are manufactured, and breaks it down. It sort of takes that perspective of taking some simple items and then showing how the manufacturing process works. It's pretty fascinating. Then in June, we're actually doing our second and now annual Tinkerfest. For those of you who got to experience it last year, it was a very brief event. We did it for just 4 hours at the end of the day. We were completely overwhelmed by the attention that it got, and we are making it a full-day event this year. And I think our aim is to actually create a festival, a real festival, in the future, and maybe even a multi-day event.
Now, what did people do when they came there for Tinkerfest?
We had a car take apart. We had catapults. We made solar s'mores. We actually had my friend Dr. Tony Hall here at UALR came out with the physics department. They brought a very large Fresnel lens, and kids were actually able to roast marshmallows and make s'mores under this giant magnifying glass. We had gentleman Ron King, who has Recycle Bikes of Arkansas. That was just a few of the things outside. And then when you walked inside, we had a tech take apart, where kids got to take computers and printers and all sorts of electronics apart, and they got to play with the components inside. And then if it was just a sort of an inert component, they made jewelry out of them. We had robots. We have a lot of robots this year. We did, oh my gosh, an introduction to Arduino, which is a microcontroller platform. I'll talk more about that. We did light painting. We did, oh man, it just went on and on and on. If anyone's ever been to the Tinkering Studio in the museum, it's just as if the Tinkering Studio grew up and took over the entire museum.
Well, Jackson, let me let you talk a little bit about a young person walking in. What takes your eye?
Everything. I can't get to enough exhibits at once. There's so many things that just are astounding. There's air pressure rockets on that shoot. There's a Bernoulli effect air blower that holds a ball about this big in the air. And you can move the blower so it's aiming sideways and the ball stays right in the air. It's very cool. There's a lot of the bed of nails is a big one. You just lay on this bed and press a button and nails rise up out. A ton of nails, yeah.
Do you go out there with your friends too?
I've taken some of my friends, yes. I took some of my friends for Tinkerfest. They enjoyed that a lot. my siblings, they enjoy the museum as well.
Well, before we get into a little more about tinkering, Joel, let me come back to you and ask you about the word make. You Google make. It's a word that by itself doesn't really define much. I followed the word make for, I guess a couple of years now. I've seen make becoming a trend. Mm-hmm. Tell our listeners what make really expands to.
There's a whole idea. You know, you grew up with tinkering. I grew up with tinkering. That's actually the word I prefer because it's more what I'm used to. In fact, for 16 years now, I've been involved in the make movement, and it really is a movement. If anyone wants to sort of see where make came from, that's sort of the idea. It came from these sort of art movements. But what you saw over the years was a lot of engineers and tech who had that sort of artist soul who started creating and making things, and make became a buzzword. So now there's this make movement, and the idea behind it is some artists just don't fit in galleries. Some people aren't really artists. They're engineers and they're makers. They're tinkers.
Does yard art fit into that?
It does. It does. I mean, you know, now I don't know about plywood cutouts with bloomers painted on them, but
no, I mean the real sculptural type things that
absolutely.
Are out in art.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go back a little bit further and give you a word that fits my generation, Heathkit.
Oh, yeah, Heathkit. They had
it was a branch of Radio Shack, wasn't it?
It was part of Radio Shack. So if you needed test equipment, if you needed anything, I mean anything from just a multimeter to check electronics to an oscilloscope or the hand tools, I mean you can get anything through Heathkit. And that was kind of where Radio Shack used to be, and then it turned into a cell phone store. But now with this make movement, you walk into a Radio Shack now. When's the last time you went into one?
Actually, a couple of days ago.
Have you seen one wall now? Is hobby electronics again,
yeah.
Which is exactly
awesome.
What it, yeah, it's exciting. That's what it used to be. And they see that there's value in that again and that people are getting excited about it. So they're back in that market.
Well, Jackson Lowry, you kind of perked up a little bit when we started talking about this electronic stuff and everything like that, the robotics. A young person like you, you've heard us talk a little bit about what we saw when we were younger, mm-hmm. your age and around that time. What interests you guys now? You live in such a high-tech world. Everything is tech around you, even sitting here in this studio. What catches you guys' eye right now?
What catches my eye is seeing a computer. And when I see a computer, I have to figure out the specs. And then it's kind of like some people who enjoy cars. They can look at a car and tell everything about that car. From the RPM of the motor to the horses, you know, everything about it. And I enjoy that with computers. Computers have become a huge part of our industry now. Same with things like smartphones, which are predominantly taking over. Smartphones and tablets are taking over the computer industry.
When I was your age, I'd have been awfully tempted to take one apart.
Oh, I've taken.
Oh, really? Really?
Yes.
You've taken that one apart?
Yes. It's actually one of the easiest things to take apart.
Does your mom and dad know that?
Yes, they know.
They do.
They
huh?
let me.
When you take things apart, what's your motivation? Is it the same thing? Is it just curiosity or what's going on?
It's curiosity a lot, but sometimes you're trying to fix something, like replacing a screen on an iPhone or something. A lot of it with me is just I'm curious about what's inside. I'll get toys and wait till they're broken to figure out how they work.
Have you taken a computer apart?
Oh, yes. I've taken many a computer apart.
Well, tell me about the first time you took one apart. When you opened up the casing there, did you know what you were going to see?
Nope.
Well, what happened next?
A lot of Google research. And I kind of put names on parts. Like, I knew what RAM was and how RAM worked and what it did, but I didn't exactly know what it looked like. So I had to do a bunch of Googling searching on RAM, and I found that pretty quickly. The hard drive in a computer was fairly obvious. There's PC fans. I could find the processing unit, the power supply, and it all just kind of started to throw itself together like a puzzle. After learning all of these things, I'll find a new computer and take it apart and learn something new.
Well, let's go back to that first one. You took it apart?
I took it apart, yes.
Did you put it back together?
Yes.
Any parts left over?
No, I was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we always had parts left over.
You have to have parts left over,
that's
don't
right.
you, Joel?
That's right. That's how you know you've done it right. Jackson and his friend Keaton, you guys have built your own computers.
Yes.
You built a server.
Yes.
You know, I met Jackson, 2 years ago?
Yes, I believe so. It was at a UAMS science camp. interested in robotic things, and then you were having this robotic class, and that's pretty much why I came, was just for the robotics.
Well, what do you see in robotics? What does robotics mean?
I see the future. I see the robotics that we have now that build cars, that do all kinds of things in the industry. And I see how you can improve upon that concept.
Now, that's tinkering right there, isn't
it?
Yeah,
that's absolutely.
Keep going there, Jackson. How?
When you see something like, let's say, a bomb robot with an arm and a tank drive, how is there a way to add a camera so that the police officer who's using it doesn't have to be looking at the robot, they can be looking at the screen? Is there a way to make it cheaper and more durable? Because bomb robots these days are extremely expensive.
Well, you should elaborate on it. It's a bomb disarming robot.
Disarming robot, yeah. A bomb disarming robot. They're expensive, and there's always a way to make it cheaper.
And they're incredibly valuable. I mean, we've seen
just this week.
Yes.
In Boston.
Yeah. There's just making it cheaper and simpler and more readily accessible to people all over the world that would need something like this. Or just making a wheelchair that is cheap and effective for people in Haiti. Things like that. It's helping, using what you're tinkering with to help someone else.
Now, when you're doing your tinkering, do lights go on in your head about what you could do down this way to make a change in it, and then you try it? Or do you just kind of – I never got quite as inquisitive as you are. I wanted to take it apart and maybe put it back together, but I didn't really spend a lot of time trying to find other things to do with it. But it sounds like that's an engineering focus that is coming in your mind. Is that right, Jackson?
Yeah, I try to. Whenever I take something apart, I try to find parts from the thing, parts of the overall project that I can use in another project. Things like LEDs and light bulbs and transformers and resistors and capacitors. It's what I try to do is, if I find something that I can't really modify it a lot, I remove parts from it to build another project with something like an Arduino. An Arduino is a microcontroller that you can code and program with C++ or Arduino C. There's so many things that you can do with it. You can control motors, you can control lights, you can control what's called a ping sensor, and it is sonar. It tells how far an object is away from it. In that, if you had a robot that had two wheels, had a tank drive system and a ping sensor on the front, it would be able to walk up to something and sense if something's there, if that thing is there, and avoid it by backing up and turning away. Same with things like switches. You can input switches as inputs, so when you bump into something, it'll back up and turn away. Or if it hits something, bumps into something that it can detect as small, it could reach out an arm and grab it and pick it up and then move somewhere else and drop it. Arduino is a huge deal in the maker and tinkering community, as you can do just about anything with it.
So it's a microcontroller. It was actually created by an Italian named Massimo Banzi, and it became a huge thing. And in fact, it's a perfect example for the make movement.
So that's virtual tinkering.
Virtual tinkering. What he ended up having then was a really marketable project, you know, and you can get an Arduino. If it's Arduino, then it's Massimo Banzi and his company. And now they're making millions of dollars off this thing, millions of dollars. Even though he tried to give it, it's not patented. He gave it all away, and he still made millions of dollars.
Well, now, Jackson, are you familiar with the software and the stuff that Joel's talking about? Or do you use it at all?
Yes. With Arduino, I've been recently attempting to code a robot that – when it bumps into something, it backs up and turns.
No one's directing you in this way. You're just kind of experimenting?
In a way, yes. Joel's helped me a lot with the coding part, which is the part that I struggle with a lot, is the coding.
Well, and coding, yeah, but you're getting online too. I mean, there's such a huge community online.
Yeah. The Arduino forums, I posted my problem, and it was fixed in 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's amazing. People are very passionate about it. And, you know, that's just the electronic side, but there's mechanical. Guys who are building hot rods, they're tinkers, they're makers.
Are there other areas of tinkering? We seem to have seen it go from my generation's time where it was stuff in your garage you worked on, or the Heathkit stuff we're talking about. Now we've gone into the virtual. There, it seems like tinkering is still the same, basically the same thing. People see something, they take it apart, they try and either put it back together or make something different with it. Mm-hmm. Is that the gist of tinkering?
Yeah. You know, it's and a lot of it is there's a lot of buzzwords involved. You hear things like upcycling. So instead of recycling, you're upcycling. You take something that is broken or it's a piece and you think, you know, I need to solve a problem. Well, a good example of that is a guy a few years ago created a way to feed his chickens automatically. And he took old CD players and old broken down cheap CD players, but the little door, you know, that holds your CDs would still work. So he used those motors and the little drive doors, and he made shuttles for the chicken feed. He set it up, and he took a garage remote control. He wired everything to. I know, it's just crazy. It sounds like something Jethro Bodine would do. That's the Beverly Hillbillies for those of you in the younger generation.
Do you know who that is, Jackson?
I do not.
Oh, good, good.
There we go. But anyway, so he did this, and he you know, made himself an automatic chicken feeder. That's the kind of stuff. You know, it's silly, but it's what he ended up doing was creating an idea all on his own.
Well, Jackson Lowry, let me ask you about your future. I mean, at 14, you've got a long ways to go in tinkering. Do you see yourself as a tinkerer forever, or are you going to move into some sort of career that's related to what you're tinkering with?
I'm hoping to move into a career that will let me tinker as much as I want and get paid for it.
Which
is like the best job ever. But in the future I'm planning on becoming a pilot and teaching people how to fly. I've got money saved up for it so I can fly. I think flying has a lot to do with tinkering. Burt Rutan, man who built amazing airplanes. They could do amazing things out of carbon fiber. That was tinkering.
Let me ask you if you see tinkering in the same way as inventing.
Inventing is taking scrap, I think, and having an idea and turning it into something. I guess tinkering is more – is there a real big difference?
I don't think there's a big difference.
I don't think so.
You know, I mean, both of them are problem solving. You know, they always say that necessity is the mother of invention. I absolutely believe that. There's no difference between tinkering and creating a piece of electronic or tinkering together a vehicle or something like that than tinkering together a spirulina farm in your house where you're actually growing green spirulina for vitamins and anything else, which people do, or creating an urban garden that you're controlling the soil content and your pH balance and your in how much you're being watered with electronic circuits that are monitoring that for you. It just depends on what you want to do, but it's all tinkering. It's do it yourself. You know, that's the other thing everybody always hears is DIY. There's actually an online centrifuge is something that you need to be able to separate different chemical processes. There's actually a guy online, and I'll get into this in a second, who put out a 3D printed pattern for a centrifuge mount for a drill. A centrifuge is very expensive, but all it really does is spin test tubes. So if you had a power drill and you had something – I know this sounds silly, but you had something that held those test tubes that you could put in that power drill, an adjustable speed power drill, then you could set it and spin those test tubes. That's your centrifuge. So if you could take a 3D printer and just print the little piece that the test tubes fit in and it cost you $3 instead of $3,000 or $4,000, isn't that smart?
Yeah.
Well, that's our world now.
Well, that brings to mind a phrase I had in my mind thinking about this program, and that's the one that comes up after talking with you guys and others who have done this thing. You say to yourself, why didn't I think of that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, what's the payoff for tinkering? For the older generation, mine was curiosity. When I would tinker with something, it was curiosity to tear it apart and maybe try and put it back together. Has that changed? It sounds like that surprise fits into there somewhere. I hear you guys talking about these things. Jackson, when you work on the stuff you're working on, do you get surprised at the outcome?
Yes, a lot. You get surprised at when you find something that you didn't know about before that makes so much sense and makes everything work. Something like a transistor.
So is that the driving force for you is to get to that point?
The aha moment?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The aha. well, this is how it works.
Yeah. It's still curiosity.
Oh, yeah.
It's, I mean, it's never changed. It's just how deep you want to go with it.
You started talking about 3D.
3D printing. It's a machine that extrudes plastic like a little hair. It's 0.5 millimeters is what most of them are. So just a thin, thin hair of plastic. Think about a hot melt glue gun. But this tiny, tiny little stream of hot plastic comes out, and it lays it onto a bed. And it's a little robot that you can program. So you've got a platform that moves across an XY axis, so back and forth and forward and back. And then you have a Z axis that goes up and down. It extrudes plastic, and it starts laying out a little matrix. And it's very Star Trek. It's kind of like the replicator on Star Trek. If you needed a gear, a worm drive.
Or hinges.
Or any of a million things that you can think of. If you wanted to try and create a prototype object that no one has ever made, but you can build it in a computer in three dimensions in a CAD, a computer-aided drafting format, you can anything you can imagine, you can build it, you can print it. And it's not a really new idea. It's been around for quite a few years, but industry is the only one who's had it. Well, I just bought my first 3D printer a few months back for the museum, and it was around $440. Bad. A small little printer, but from that, this huge industry has sprung up of do-it-yourselfers who have these things now. In fact, we have some good friends here in Little Rock now who are helping us create a lab at the museum. They have a company called Cubed, and they're just a couple of guys, Nathan Myers and David Maynard, Menard. Who started a company that they're both engineering background, and David's from your generation, Nathan's from a younger generation, and they ordered a 3D printer to help them make some components that they needed. And when they got a hold of this thing, they never had one before. When they got a hold of it, they looked at it and went, "Well, that's not very good." So they built their own. Now they've got an entire business right here in Little Rock that's what they do, and they're really making a name for themselves on the internet, and they're very new.
Mm-hmm.
So it's exploding quickly.
Well, Jackson, does 3D printing, does that fit into your thinking processes of stuff, or is that down the road yet?
A 3D printer would be able to, as Joel was saying, you can build mounts for a robot. So you could build a frame for a robot that could hold the Arduino microcontroller, your servos, and all your sensors.
Make wheels, make gears.
Yeah, wheels, gears, everything. So
does your mind just kind of create this stuff in your mind as the day goes on, and then you go back and try and play with it or tweak with it or tinker with it?
Yeah. You think of something, and then you think, oh, I'll try that, and we'll see if that works. And then you go and try it, and if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, you go try another idea until it works. So it works completely.
And you hope you don't have too many parts left over.
Can I pull my soapbox out now?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to reach down here and get my soapbox. All right, so this is really my mission at the Museum of Discovery and for a lot of people in Central Arkansas and all over the world. When I was a kid, when you were a kid, Phil, we had shop in school. You took shop. And back in those days, you took it because you wanted to work on your car or you wanted to work with tools and work with your hands. You know, we had shop when we were kids, and then shop kind of fell away to computer lab. You know, for a while it was shop and computer lab. And then schools were like, well, we're going to get rid of shop. We can't afford to do both. And computer lab is the way to go. And that was, you know, late 70s, early 80s that really started happening. You know, a lot of schools still have computer lab, but what most of them are now is just keyboard classes.
Yeah.
They're not teaching programming. Well, now you have Microsoft and everything's done for you. So it's just a keyboard class. Here's how to use an Excel spreadsheet. Here's how to type. Well, now we're in a world where we have computers that can physically touch the real world. So we're ready for shop again in school. We're really at this tipping point with industry bringing manufacturing back to America. So we need to get back to that. And you know, one way to do it is to have shop in school again, but not the kind of shop that we had when we were kids, but a 21st century shop. You have computer-controlled CNC mills. It's computer numeric coded mills that you can program to actually work metal, and you build the design in the the computer, and then the computer translates it to the machine. So kids aren't even necessarily touching a blade. They're creating and they're making prototypes and innovating and making these amazing ideas. So 21st Century Shop is not computer lab on this side of the building and then the shop on the other side of the building. It's both. Mm-hmm. It's computers. It's machines. It's making. It's creating. It's innovating. It's what will take us to Mars, certainly. Yeah. DARPA and NASA have both done programs where they've had guys who have tinkered together probes. Guys took a Lego NXT brain and they tinkered with it and they created a out of atmosphere probe that NASA launched, and it collected data. These were just regular guys. It collected data and they brought the data back and they analyzed it.
And you know, we didn't even talk at all about Tinker Toys.
Oh yeah, Tinker Toys. That's it. And what did I have when I was a kid?
There was the Erector Sets.
Erector
Sets, Tinker Toys, Lincoln Logs.
Lincoln
I kind
Logs,
of fit into those things.
I had
Legos.
Snap Circuits. That's the thing, is you're starting to see this trend of that kind of toy again.
Are there toys, Jackson, that look like Tinker type toys to you that are on the market? Anything that's out there that kind of rings a bell?
One thing that I do enjoy a lot are Snap Circuits that. It's all these little parts that you can put together with batteries and sound makers and a speaker or a fan and a motor that'll shoot a little fan blade up into the air and all these things that you can just snap together.
Are they toys?
Yes. They're huge. They sell them at Radio Shack. A lot of people love these little snap circuits.
That's what it's called, snap circuits?
Really? I have some in the tinkering studio that
yeah.
I use.
Well, before we wrap up, Joel, tell our listeners again about what's coming up at the Museum of Discovery.
Well, we've got How Things Are Made coming up, but the big one is June 15th. June 15th is Tinkerfest. It's all day long. We have makers from all over the state and some folks from out of state who are coming in, and they're bringing amazing things. We're going to have, it's like I said, everything you can imagine. It'll be from catapults to a learn to solder workshop to an introduction to robotics. Jackson's on a robotics team that's all homeschoolers. Mm-hmm. They're going to be there, and they're going to be showing off robots and telling parents how they can get their kids into
cool.
that. It's the entire – our museum is many thousand square feet, and it will absolutely be filled up with everything you can imagine.
A lot of tinkering.
And it's anything from like, I said, catapults and silly things like that. But, sewing. Sewing is a form of tinkering, and it's one of those crafts that people don't do anymore. But it's experimenting with tools and materials, and that's, whether it's little girls, which we tend to think of, but we have boys do it. I encourage the girls to do. I'm doing an engineering camp this summer that's just for girls. Girls in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math.
I'm sure there's all kinds of people listening to the program today from all the different generations, and especially the younger generation. And Jackson, I'm so glad you were here today to talk about the young people that can get involved with tinkering. And I'm glad that we've had a chance to talk about it. I do want to thank my guests for being with me here today. The last voice you heard there was Joel Gordon. He's the Visitor Experience Director at the Museum of Discovery here in Little Rock. And then our younger generation guest has been Jackson Lowry. He's 14, and as you've heard him talk about, he's well into a good future, I think. Joel, thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Phil.
And Jackson, same for you, and good luck in the future.
Thank you.
Folks, thanks for listening to the program today. Again, let me tell you, you can listen to the longer version of this program and all our other ones now that the website's back together. Our podcast will be there for this program and many of our past programs. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow is a production of UALR Public Radio and comes to you from the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, Arkansas.